Are you on?
The Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee will come to order. For the record, this is Tuesday, April 24th, 2012. And for the record, we do have quorum. Today, our order of business is regarding confirmation hearings of two candidates for the Board on Judicial Standards. The first one will be Terry Sario. And Ms. Sario, if you would approach the table, we will start. For the record, also, I know there's a number of people in the room. This is, we will allow, as we always do, the public to make comment about our discussion, but the discussion is strictly limited to the agenda items. It is strictly on the confirmation of two individuals and nothing more. I know that there are concerns that there's a public discussion regarding the Judicial Standard Board in its entirety, but that is a different issue. We are talking today strictly about the applicants for this particular board. Having said that, Ms. Sario, welcome to the committee. Would you, introduce yourself to us?
Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be with you. My name is Terry Sario, and I reside in Minneapolis. I believe you have a copy of my resume, which would explain what I have done over these past many years.
Ms. Sario, do you, you've now served tentatively on the Judicial Standard Board. Could you tell me some impressions of what you've seen so far?
My impressions range across the board. I am very impressed with the quality of the discussion that takes place among my colleagues on the board. Everyone approaches all the issues that come before the board very seriously. I must say that some of the letters of complaint have surprised me in that they seem to be somewhat minor concern when you think about the importance of the judiciary before us. Then, of course, there are others that are very serious that we delve into. I've also been impressed by the seriousness with which particularly the judges and the lawyers will delve into issues of the law in great depth. And so my general takeaway is the board is performing a very useful function, that the members are very serious about their responsibilities, and that over time, the net result of their deliberations will have a positive effect.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions for the applicant? Ms. Sario, whenever we talk about the Standard Review Board, it's kind of like a mystery in many ways because, as you know, there's no public hearing answering the questions of whether it's about the professionalism of a judge that may be in question or perhaps other serious issues facing judicial conduct. And it's almost just as much a mystery to legislators as it is the public. And the question that I have is, are you satisfied with the disclosure, or perhaps the lack of disclosure, that the Judicial Standard Board now exercises under?
I think that's a very important question. And since Mr. Wentz and I have been on the board, both of us have been concerned about making certain that the board adheres to its own rules and procedures, and in particular makes certain that those rules, procedures, and policies are as transparent as they should be to the public and to those individuals who may be affected by any of their decisions. And both of us have been working with the other members on just that issue. How transparent are we? The dealings have to be somewhat private because you're dealing with accusations against individuals in their careers. And in that sense, it's really a personnel matter. But I believe that our policies, our procedures can be more transparent, our explanations for our decisions can be more transparent.
Thank you. Is there any other questions? Sir Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up question to your statement regarding transparency. You indicated you've been working with the other members of the board regarding the issue of transparency. Is there any difficulty or problem that you have perceived since coming on the board regarding this issue?
Ms. Sario.
I wouldn't describe it as a problem or a disagreement. I think that some of the individuals who are members of the board had been functioning in an environment that they felt comfortable in and weren't questioning or didn't see the need for an internal review of our own policies and procedures. Once raised as an issue, the other members of the boards acknowledged that this is something that we should be doing.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what changes are you then advocating, you know, as a result of your discussions with your fellow board members?
Yes, sir.
Two members of the board are doing a very thorough review of our internal policies and procedures and are going to encapsulate them in a way that we can put them online so that anyone who's interested in what they are and how we function will be available online. We're going to issue a new policy manual. And I believe that we'll even do such things as look at the letters that are sent out and make certain that the letters are written in language that is clearer and more to the point than sort of what I would call legalese.
Any other questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As somebody who's relatively new to the legislature and all the various boards and agencies, maybe somebody could tell me exactly what the board does, and so that I can, you know, I'm not exactly sure what the board does, what their procedures are. I mean, we're talking, it looks like we're talking insider stuff, and I'm coming from the outside. So if somebody could explain exactly what the board does, what their responsibilities are, how do they answer to the legislature, or do they answer to the legislature?
Ms. Sario, could you give a little review of your understanding of the board and how does the legislature get informed about the board's decisions?
The board was established by the legislature as an independent state agency to receive complaints about judicial behavior that may not be ethical, not their decisions, but their behavior, their conduct. And the board functions in a way to examine those complaints and to determine whether there's any validity to those complaints. If the board determines that there is, it then goes through a series of procedures to investigate the nature of the complaint and the nature of the behavior. Ultimately, if the board finds that there is legitimacy behind a complaint, it can then do a number of things, including ultimately making a recommendation to the Supreme Court to remove a judge. So it has that kind of advisory role in the review of ethical conduct of judges. Senator Limmer, I don't honestly know how to answer the question about how the board reports to the legislature. I have not. My colleague might know the answer to that. I do not know directly how we do report to the legislature.
Yeah. We can hold on that, Ms. Sario. Senator Hoffman, I think since the board was created by the legislature, meetings are generally held in secret. They review the issue at hand. Quite often, there are times when litigants will put together perhaps a false accusation, perhaps it's just anger over a verdict that they had and they're wanting to seek some type of redress. And then there's also other issues that are of more substance. And So the legislature in the past had decided that these meetings would be held as non-public, and that we're putting a lot of trust in these people to review the charges against a judge and determine whether the judge needs either corrective sanction or perhaps a recommendation that the judge is removed. That's why this particular review of these candidates are so vitally important, because we kind of go forward, and if upon approval, we let them loose, and we don't really have a full accounting of what they do or why they do. We know the ultimate outcome of the decision that they'll make, but somehow it kind of goes into the into a murky, shadowy place, and then it emerges on the other end. And I think there's current discussion from a number of quarters in the state that are wondering why. After all, judges are elected individuals. They're not private citizens. It's very similar to the consideration by the Human Rights Department of how they handle accusations of discrimination. The only difference is with the Human Rights Board, they're reviewing the actions of private citizens, not elected officials. And so that's where this is a little bit of a hybrid when it comes to public record. Senator Hall.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sario, on the ethical complaints, first off, are those complaints on judges that are on the bench while they're presiding, or is it also have to do with them in their personal life? Do you know?
Ms. Sario.
The complaints can be of both natures, okay. Their performance on the bench or perhaps their behavior privately.
And a follow-up, if I could. And then who decides what's ethical? Is that the idea that that's what the board does?
Yes, sir.
There is, as I'm sure you know, there is the Minnesota Code on Judicial Conduct, most recently revised in 2008, that details all the behaviors that may that are permissible and not permissible for a judge. And what the role of the board is to make certain that the canons of this code are adhered to by the judges.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how can legislators find out about any disciplinary actions that the board may take against a judge if you would determine that their behavior has been unethical? Where do we get that kind of information?
The board does issue at times what are called private admonitions, and those would remain private between the judge and the board. Then there are more public admonitions that ultimately can end up in a public hearing before a panel. And then the panel's deliberations can be appealed, and ultimately it can go to the Supreme Court. That public process is open to everyone. So the only thing that would be kept private would be private admonitions between the board and the judge. And they tend to be minor. They tend to be the first. If there's a series or a pattern of behavior that's taken more seriously by the board, and then it becomes more in the public domain.
Ms. Sario, I understand you are not an attorney.
I am not.
And do you have an expertise or knowledge about courtroom mannerisms, or do you follow the law in the development of law as in order to be qualified for this, or are you more of a removed candidate? And that certainly can have its value as well. I'm not an attorney either, that I'm proud to say. So do you have any comment about that?
I am not a lawyer. I have great respect for the law. I am seeking the appointment as a public member, and I believe what I bring to the deliberations of the board our years of experience on nonprofit and corporate boards. And I can bring that history of knowing how a body should function effectively to the deliberations of the board, and I believe I already have. And so it's more my experience in running organizations and being on boards that I bring to this particular deliberation. I don't purport to be that sophisticated about the law, and I must say that in the first few months, we receive packets of material to read that, I am not exaggerating, that are this thick, and I would periodically go to the computer and look up various legal phrases just to make certain I fully appreciate the nature of what the complaints are. But I believe that my experience has value in these deliberations.
Ms. Sario, how many, with that stack that you consider, is how many cases do you think you consider, let's say, in a month or a quarter of the year? Can you give us any idea?
The board reviews approximately on an average year 150 complaints within the year, and we meet every 6 weeks. And so there are an average, I would say, of about 15 complaints every time that we meet. There is usually great unanimity among the board on those that are what I would characterize as minor complaints. It's only the more serious complaints where we spend time and we deliberate.
Do you find that the caseload, Ms. Sario, is, we hear of the caseload of judges throughout the state as being immense? They have very limited time to review cases. I hear complaints of judges all the time that sometimes that puts a unique pressure on them to do quality work, and yet at the same time they feel in many cases overburdened and their staff is overburdened. Do you think that might contribute to some of the complaints on judges?
It certainly does contribute to complaints about judges' workloads, and there are some such complaints almost at every meeting. I don't know if the workload necessarily contributes to the other kinds of complaints. Frequently, the complaints are because the individual who is writing to the board is unhappy with the decision that the board, that the judge has made. And we are not there to review the judge's decision. Those complaints, if I may say so, are somewhat frivolous from my point of view, because it's taking time of the board, and it's also, in some ways, not addressing the fact that these people really just they're not happy with the judge's decision. I can't speak to whether, in a broader sense, judges' workloads contribute to the nature of the complaints that we receive. I tend not to think so.
Any other questions? Senator Martin.
Mr. Chair, just a comment that I think that given the nature of this board and the way boards operate in general, I'm glad to hear that while a lot of the complaint process is private, I'm glad to hear you're reviewing all of the procedures. I think the letters that go out to people when a decision is made is critically important to people's understanding. Otherwise, this is black box of something happens and I didn't like the result. Well, I didn't like the result in court or whatever, or I had a legitimate beef about the judge's behavior or something. We send it to you, never hear anything more, and so on. So I think it is extremely important that the documents get looked at and make sure that they're worded in an appropriate way, because that is the transparency that's available in a case like that. And I think your comment earlier that it was interesting to hear you say that a lot of the board members hadn't questioned it because they didn't think about questioning it until others came in and said, let's take a look, and they were open to it. But I think that's human nature to not challenge things a lot. But I'm glad you're doing that, because I think that that is the one area where the public it's a big part of confidence in the judiciary is that somebody's reviewing it and that there's good procedures, even if you don't like the result, at least that that within your framework you can let people know in a way that they understand. So I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Senator Harrington.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Sario, I'm just wondering about how the decisions are publicized. I know with other boards, similar nature, they post the decisions on a website. Is there a way for the public to get access to the public decisions?
They are posted on the website, the board's website.
Are there, like, can you go back and hit and review a historical to see how the board has decided in past cases also?
That's a really good question, and I don't honestly know the answer to that question because I haven't tried to do it. But I know they are posted on the website.
Thank you very much.
And Ms. Sario, while we're on the kind of the perspective of cases, you had mentioned that many are frivolous. Out of 150 in a year, on a proportion or a percentage, how many do you think are generally fit into that frivolous category?
Based on my experience, which is limited, I would say at least half to maybe a little more than that.
All right. Okay. I hope you understand that we don't get much of an opportunity to peer into the black box here, and we're asking a number of questions so that we have a better understanding.
I do understand that.
All right. Any further questions? Do we have a motion? Senator Marty?
I move that and maybe council can give the exact language, that the recommendation be recommended for approval, the confirmation be recommended to the full Senate.
Is that the motion?
Staff is.
Senator Marty moves that the appointment of Terry Sario be recommended to move to the Senate floor with recommendation to confirm. Is there further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be here today.
Thank you. The next person under consideration is Mr. William Wirtz. Mr. Wirtz, would you take a position at the table? Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Do you have any opening comments?
I'm Bill Wirtz. I'm a resident of Minneapolis. I'm a lawyer at Dorsey & Whitney. I've been doing professional ethics, mainly lawyer ethics, since 1981 as my principal occupation. Before that, I was a college professor. I have a PhD in religious studies.
You even have your own chorus, Mr.
Yes.
Fire.
I'm impressed.
Well, Mr. Wirtz, we've had your file that we've reviewed, and I'm just going to ask members to ask any questions if they have any. Are there any questions for Mr. Wirtz? Perhaps, Mr. Wirtz, maybe you could give us a little bit of a review of your resume. I know you've worked at Dorsey, but...
I was the director of the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility, which deals with complaints against lawyers from 1985 to 1992, and an assistant director before that. And then I went to Dorsey in 1992, and was the ethics partner at Dorsey until 2 years ago. I'm now of counsel. And so I was responsible for compliance issues at Dorsey, and then I also represented lawyers and also a few judges in judicial and legal discipline proceedings. The way I became involved with the judicial board was that I represented a judge, and this has all become public, named Kevin Burke, who was accused by the board of a violation. And we appealed that, and the charge was dismissed. And I believe that the procedures that were used in connection with that were not clear and not fair. And so I wrote a letter to the Supreme Court in about 2005, I think it was, asking the Supreme Court to appoint a committee to study the Board on Judicial Standards. And the court did appoint a committee that consisted of legislators, public members, lawyers, and judges. There were maybe 25 people on the committee. The public hearings were conducted. We met for something like a year and a half. Public report was filed, and the court, as a result of that, ordered a significant number of changes in the procedural rules of the Board on Judicial Standards. The one limitation of the committee was that the court felt that it was unfair to judges for the committee to see the files. And so we never saw any private files, and the black box metaphor was something that we struggled with, too, to know how it was the board actually did its business. So when I became appointed last June, I got a chance to start seeing files and came to understand some things that I hadn't been able to understand from the outside. I would echo what Terry Sario said, that in the last year, a number of changes have been proposed to the board's procedures by members of the board, and I think the board's culture had been somewhat secretive and somewhat resistant to change, but I think that that's that the board members have been responsive, and a number of changes have been made, and in particular, the policies and procedures should be will be up for approval at the June meeting, and are the intention is that they be posted on the website as soon as practical after that. So that should make some things more open. One of the changes, too, has been to direct the executive secretary that the disposition letters be clearer about what exactly the disposition is and what the reason for the disposition is. When I was at the lawyers board, one of the striking things, I think, was how much more open the lawyers board has been over the years than the judicial board has been to understanding what's being done and why. As far as being able to see what the judicial board does now, there are on the website summaries of admonitions so that you anyone can see, for example, that admonitions are issued for it. The most common thing would be a judge's tardiness in getting a decision out. Demeanor, would undue harshness or something like that would be another fairly common subject of admonitions. The public disciplines are posted, but only for, I don't know exactly what the period of time is, perhaps a year or so. And most of the public decisions thereafter are available in the Northwest Second Reporter system that anyone can find in that way.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask the same question I asked of the other candidate in that I'm hearing a lot about secrecy and the black box and the public's trust. You know, as elected officials, we're accountable to the public, and pretty much my life is an open book since I got elected, and judges are elected also. So how do I, as a representative of the people, find information about how does that get reported back to the legislature? You know, it's, my understanding is we have oversight here. And so I didn't really get the answer from the last candidate. Maybe she didn't have the answer. But how do we find out about the disciplinary actions? Then I'm sure I'll have a follow-up.
There's two different questions there. I think one is reporting as a whole, and then the other is just the disciplinary actions, which are a small percentage of what the dispositions and of what the board does. I think by rule, the private disciplines are private. And the Supreme Court adopts rules that we follow, both substantive rules called the Code of Judicial Conduct, the shalls and shall nots for the judges, and then the how-to rules, how the board operates. And one of those rules is that private files are private, and we may not disclose them. So we can post synopses of the private dispositions so that the kind of fact that leads to a discipline can be seen on the website or in the annual report, and that's been done on a selected basis. There aren't that many private disciplines. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of a dozen to 15 a year. And then as far as public disciplines, there was a recent flurry of cases, but over, say, the last 10 to 15 years, I think there's maybe one public discipline a year. The gross number of complaints isn't that large either, 150. And as Terry was saying, I think almost anyone who looked at the great majority of those would say, this is not something this board can do anything about. Maybe the Court of Appeals can, maybe God can, maybe human nature can, but there's not a complaint stated that comes close to the Code of Judicial Conduct. I don't know whether the board reports back to the legislature, and Senator Limmer referred to a closed session. I've only been on board since last June, and I don't know anything about that.
Any other questions? Senator Hoff or McGuire? Hoffman?
I just had a follow-up.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with all the you keep talking about the private decisions, and I understand that was brought down by the Supreme Court, but I'm starting to wonder how the board will ensure public trust. These are elected officials, after all. How does the board let the public know that they can trust the board members with the decisions they're making if this all is private? I'm not really sure. I'm trying to figure out how the public has trust in the board. If we're talking about private decisions with a judge, an elected judge, not an appointed judge, not, you know, we're not talking about the typical employment law that you would see in a private business, where Senator Newman had touched on that before, if the Department of Human Rights gets involved.
Well, it's a decision that the Minnesota Supreme Court has made, and that's been the rule forever. It isn't an option with the board to say we'll start disclosing these because we think there ought to be more accountability. So whether the synopses of the admonitions that are issued is enough, I don't know, but it's in effect not our decision, it's the court's decision.
Senator Hoffman, I may step in here on a previous question, and maybe it was inadvertent, but this board does not report anything to the legislature regarding any complaint, any sanction, anything like that. And that's why we sometimes are wondering. And I think if we wonder, then the public is wondering.
Thank you.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your background and your history, Mr. Wertz. And so I'm just going to ask a question because of your history that you had been dealing with situations that might have come before the board, and then you get appointed to the board. So now that you've been on it since June, what have been your impressions and your surprises or your, what's been your learnings that you've been, sometimes people, from looking at it from the outside in is different than once you get on the inside?
When I was at the lawyers board for 11 years, there were 1,000 or 1,200 complaints a year. So I saw maybe 10,000 complaints altogether, something like that. And the percentage of the complaints to the lawyers board that are meritorious, where the lawyer really did do something wrong or it looks like it, are so much higher than the judicial board, it surprised me how meager the complaints coming month in and month out are. I think virtually every decision that's been made by the board in my time there has been unanimous or unanimous but for one. So they haven't been close cases. Another general impression, I think, is that the board members are diverse in a lot of different ways and diligent about their responsibilities. I think any board has its own culture and history, and that this board's culture and history was secretive, and that it was not as careful as it could have been about complying with every procedural regulation. And Terry and I in particular have brought matters to the board's attention of how we could become more public, more open, more compliant, and the board has been very receptive to those requests that we look for ways to improve. We've also improved, I think, a board participate more. There are some very talented board members who haven't participated as fully in the big cases as they could have. And in effect, the board can not just delegate everything, but it itself be more involved. And again, the board's been very receptive to change. So I've counted that my nearly a year on the board now as being a very successful time and a very collegial time with the board members. I had been a critic of the board before I came on the board. And in fact, in June of last year, there's a point-counterpoint on a particular issue in the Bench and Bar magazine where I published the one in the board of which I had just become a member of the other. And so they, I might have expected to some frostiness when I showed up. But on the contrary, it's been very collegial and very receptive to change.
Senator Hoffman, did you
thank, thank you, Mr. Chair. So you've talked about some of the changes that you want to see on the board. What specific changes would you like to see implemented, or have you implemented? And can you be as specific as possible? What was the policy that you saw, and what did you see that needed to be changed, and then did you implement it? You know, that's kind of a long question, but
I think the one was that the letters that were the most of the dismissals and the admonitions were by letter from the executive secretary, and they were not always clear about what the reason was, or and sometimes even what the result was. And we have mandated that those be made clear. There was the wrong version of the Code of Judicial Conduct was being applied to some cases. The code was amended in 2009 for conduct on and after July 1, 2009. And the new code was actually being applied to old cases, and that was just wrong as a matter of law, and that was changed. There were rules of the Board on Judicial Standards on expungement of files that were had been interpreted in good faith in a certain way, but the Board now believes mistakenly. And that has been changed to alter the schedule of expungement. Board members will be involved going forward in the close review of public cases to enhance the quality of the board's prosecution of those cases. The board has only, on average, as I said, perhaps one public case a year, and it's crucially important that we prosecute those, we review them for, and to be sure we're making our best judgment and that we prosecute them in the most effective way. And there's a wealth of talent on the board that is going to be used better than it's been used in the past. The website has not included the policies and procedures. Those will be published on the website this summer. I may have forgotten some things, but that's what comes to mind.
Mr. Warnes, when it comes to expungement of files, does that mean that are the records destroyed, or is this an expungement of the individual judge's misdeeds and that then it would be sealed, or how does that work?
Expungement means destruction, and both the Lawyers Board and the Judicial Board have rules for destruction of files, and the Judicial Board's rules were basically that dismissals would be expunged after a certain period of time. And there were what I would call qualified dismissals that were nonetheless dismissals, and they weren't being destroyed, and they should be destroyed. There's also a group of files called warnings that were disciplines. It's now called admonition, and there's some technical differences I won't go into. The old rules that were amended in 2009 required destruction of warnings, too. If there had been no further complaints of misconduct for a period of years. And so those warnings will now be destroyed. The public disciplines, the probations and other serious things will not be destroyed. And going forward, the admonitions for private misconduct will not be destroyed. They'll be permanently retained.
Mr. Warnes, are you in favor of expungements when it comes to this matter, or to the point that the records are completely removed?
Yes. But from our point of view, I think the crucial thing is that the board, which is a law enforcement agency, comply with the law. And the Supreme Court sets the law for us. Here are the rules. And the Supreme Court has adopted, as I say, both for the Lawyers Board and the Judicial Board, expungement rules many years ago, sometime in the 70s, I think it was. So these are not new rules or anything. And it just had to do with the correct interpretation of the expungement rules.
Any other questions? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that point, have you and the board received clear instructions from the Supreme Court on the interpretation of this expungement rule?
No.
Mr. Warren?
We have advised the Supreme Court of our intent to expunge and asked the court if it wished to comment. It's not presented to the court as a petition or a case, but as a matter of information with an opportunity to say we're wrong if we're wrong.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
So the determination that the expungement rule has been incorrectly applied over the last decade or two decades or whatever, is this your opinion as opposed to the Supreme Court?
It's always been a matter of the board's interpretation of the Supreme Court rules. The current interpretation is different from the prior interpretation. We've advised the court of our current interpretation and said we intend to implement it starting in June, unless the court advises us that or orders us to the contrary.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
And the interpretation of this rule, the genesis of the idea that the rule has been incorrectly applied, would it be fair to assume that this is your idea or your interpretation?
You mean mine individually?
Yours individually.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Latt.
I may have missed an opening remark, but how does the chairman intend to proceed in terms of motions and so on?
Well, we will be considering not only discussion, but we'll also have, what do we have, three options? One is an intent to, the recommendations would be either with recommendation to confirm, without recommendation, or no action. Those are the three choices we have. And we're just ferreting out if there's any other discussion. Sarah Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wirtz, have you ever represented judges before the board?
Yes, I represented Judge Burke in the matter that I alluded to, and I've represented, I think it's perhaps four other judges. So it's a very small part of, and that's over a period of maybe 15 years. So it was a very small part of my practice. That the only one in which there amounted to anything, there was a discipline, was the one related to Judge Burke, and that was dismissed after appeal.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wirtz, if I understand correctly, your testimony is that you've represented over the course of your career about four judges before the board.
Four plus Burke, so five that come to mind anyway, yes.
And, of course, you know, you have got a very wonderful reputation in the area of ethics. I mean, you've been involved in the ethics of the legal profession for many, many years. So in addition to formally representing judges before the board over the years, have you had occasion to have judges contact you involving cases where you did not, either informally or formally, where you did not appear in front of the board, but you were providing representation and advice to judges?
I can't think of any where I actually opened a file. I think I probably had a half a dozen calls or something like that over the years, either from judges or from lawyers representing judges, wanting a kind of second opinion on something. But no, I had no expertise in judicial ethics really until the about 2004, whenever it was that Kevin Burke called me, and I got involved in that case, and that's really what was my introduction to the world of judicial ethics.
Thank you, Mr. Warrenson. One final question. You've been on the board, I think, since, I think you said June of last year. During the course of you being on the board since June, have you had any occasions where you found it necessary to recuse yourself because of either a real or a potential conflict of interest? And if so, how many times?
There were
Mr. Warren.
There were several matters that I have had to recuse myself. There were several matters that were nearly done. All the major decisions were made. And I'll just give an example. The discipline action against Judge Nordby. The complainant was Watch. One of my partners was advising Watch on production of documents. I decided to recuse because of that connection. So I would say maybe five matters altogether where I've recused in, and four of those are now completely over. So in the day-to-day, month-to-month, I have not had to recuse, and my affiliation with Dorsey will come to an end at, on December 31st of this year when I'll retire from that.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Wirth, thank you. How many attorneys in your firm do that kind of work representing clients before the board?
Zero.
Ms. Wirth.
There's almost no judges who ever have represented before the board, and nobody in my firm that I know of other than myself has ever appeared before the board. Ken Jorgensen, who's my successor as ethics partner, was a judge before he became a Dorsey ethics partner, and he occasionally gets a call from a judge about how to comply.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I must have misunderstood something then. What was the conflict with your partner that was?
He was a complainant. The Watch organization had was asked to produce some documents, and he advised that organization about their document production.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Wortman.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Warrens. We have not met, but I'm glad that you're here today, and I thank you for your service on this board. Clearly, you have very stellar credentials, and so given that context, though, I'd like to ask you a few questions. In particular, I'd like to know your approach. You know, what do you believe is the role of the board, and what do you believe is your responsibility as a member of that board?
Well, the board's primary responsibility has to do with receiving and considering and deciding on complaints about judges' compliance with the Code of Judicial Conduct. The board also has the authority to open files on its own motion, and that's the principal responsibility. The board also does education on ethics matters for judges. I think I've devoted my life to essentially the professional ethics, and I think that professional ethics boards are extraordinarily important because the role of professionals, whether they're elected judges or licensed lawyers, is very important, and the public has to know that the boards will take their complaints seriously and devote expertise and resources to those things. I spent quite a bit of my life prosecuting ethics complaints against lawyers, and I take very seriously the idea that the board has to enforce standards and that that will result in discipline from time to time, and that the board owes the members of the public clear explanations of what its policies and procedures are.
Senator Orban.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Warrens, do you think that the role of the Judicial Standards Board is different than the Office of the Lawyer's Professional Responsibility, the role and the approach of that, and could you talk a little bit about the differences?
Yes, they're different in several important ways. The judicial board deals with officials who are appointed and then elected, or sometimes elected first, and that so dealing with elected officials is a different sort of thing. Another difference is that the lawyers board has a director. Or it's really the director of the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility, who's really the center of that's where the complaints come, that's where the exonerations are given, that's where the disciplines come from. Those are signed by the director. So the I accuse, I exonerate, comes from the director, not from the board. The lawyers board has some adjudicative responsibilities, some policy-setting responsibilities, but it's not a prosecutor. On the other hand, the judicial board, even though there's only one individual who signs complaints and admonitions and so forth, it's the board that says, I accuse, or we accuse, we exonerate. And the board has an executive secretary. And secretary and director are not chosen by accident for those different roles. So there, and then the lawyer's board, the director's office, answer to the Supreme Court. The director answers to it, that board and to the Supreme Court. The judicial board has a diverse kind of the governor appoints, the legislature funds and confirms individuals and funds the operation, and the Supreme Court sets the procedural rules and the substantive code of judicial conduct. And so it was that Supreme Court committee in 2006-07 that brought together those different constituencies and public members all to look at the Board on Judicial Standards and say, how can the procedures be improved?
Mr. Chair, so does the board, given your answer, does the board then do both? It prosecutes and it makes the decision about whether there's been a violation? It decides whether to prosecute and
It depends on the level. If the board issues an admonition, the rule of procedure says that an admonition is appealed, in effect, to the board. It's actually a proposed admonition that, as to which there's an appeal to the board. If the board issues a formal complaint finding there's serious misconduct, and it results, say, in a public reprimand, as in the recent case of Judge Armstrong, if he doesn't appeal, that's the end. On the other hand, if the board seeks suspension or removal of the judge, as in the Karasoff case, then that has to go to the Supreme Court for a determination of the board doesn't have the power to take a judge out of office. The court does. And so there we're more like a prosecutor.
Mr. Chair, but the first work of identifying it, sometimes even itself, a violation and then determining whether or not there's been a violation and a recommendation to the Supreme Court goes through this board. So it's doing both functions at some point, correct?
Well, as something like the Karasoff case, there's the investigative function, the prosecutorial function. That's the only function. There's no judicial function in the very serious cases.
But in the not-so-serious cases, we've got a board that is making a decision, interpreting, or using its discretion as to whether to move forward.
In that case, let's say it's an admonition. A judge, the most common one would be there's a statute saying make your decisions within 90 days. This judge loses track. It's 112 days. We issued an admonition. That judge says, I don't want to take that admonition. It wasn't my fault. I was too busy, et cetera, et cetera. The board then considers whether that explanation is good enough and will not go forward with the admonition. So, in effect, there's both, in that circumstance, a prosecutorial and an adjudicative function. That was a rule that was adopted by the Supreme Court without the recommendation of that committee that I've mentioned.
Well, Mr. Warnes, that is of concern to me, that it is functioning in both capacities in some of these cases. I think it's should be of public concern. I wanted to ask you about your decision in the bench and bar about the discretionary role or interpretive role. That would be your position, that the board should be interpreting and using its discretion to determine whether or not a judge in his or her public comments has had an impact on pending cases. Is that your view, sir?
Mr. Warnes.
I'm not sure I understood the question. The rule is a very demanding one, I think. The board has to, in order to, the rule used to state up until 2009, a judge shall not make public comment on a pending case, period. That rule was amended by the Supreme Court to say a judge shall not comment on a pending case, not just a case before the judge, but any pending case, where that comment may reasonably be expected to impair the fairness or outcome of the proceeding. Well, now, when the judge isn't presiding over the case is, let's say it's before the U.S. Supreme Court or before a federal district court. How could that comment ever impair the fairness or outcome of the proceeding? It can't. So to prove by clear and convincing evidence that it's apt to impair the fairness or outcome, you really need to see, is the jury veneer apt to be tainted by what that judge said? And that has a lot to do with, where is the forum? Did this judge say that to the Winona Elks Club? I'm from Winona, and I've gone to the Elks Club. I have a hard time imagining that even though it's a public forum, that would ever impair the fairness of, say, a Minneapolis federal district court trial. So my position was that this was a rule whose application is very nuanced, and the proof standards are very strict. The board had a much broader standard for when that rule could be applied. And I thought then, and I still think, that the board was wrong.
Well, in that, sir, I respectfully disagree. I think the rules are the rules, because I don't think that that's how they would be applied to a judicial candidate. And so I think the public's interest is much broader than whether or not the speech somehow impairs fairness in a particular proceeding. It also could have the tendency to impair the public's confidence in the judiciary that some judges can speak about cases and other judges can't, because there's a board that makes the discretionary decision. And there are some folks that are governed by the code that have to deal with a certain standard and others that don't. And I'm very concerned and troubled by your approach to this.
Well, let me add one other perspective. There were public funds in the sum of about $1.5 million from the Minnesota Lawyers Board and the Minnesota Supreme Court, paid to the plaintiff's attorneys in the Republican Party versus White case, which was found by the U.S. Supreme Court that the Code of Judicial Conduct violated the First Amendment. We now have a case called Wersel versus Sexton that's gone into the Eighth Circuit and now to a full panel of the Eighth Circuit. And I'm sure there will be a petition to the Supreme Court to grant, the U.S. Supreme Court to grant cert in that. And if the plaintiffs prevail, there will be another $1.5 million. So the First Amendment is the framework for these free speech rules. And the difficulty in complying with the First Amendment is very considerable. And the cost of being wrong about the First Amendment is very considerable. And so before the board goes plunging off into, say, accusing Kevin Burke of violation of that very rule, it had to count the cost. When I represented Judge Burke and the board had to count the cost, it backed off. It realized it couldn't make that proof. And my point is that that was the right decision, and that should be their policy going forward instead of some broader standards like the public might be concerned. The public might be concerned is not a viable First Amendment standard after, I can list the cases, Gentile versus Nevada State Bar, Republican Party versus White, and other First Amendment cases. So however much we might have that feeling, it's not a viable First Amendment standard.
With all due respect, sir, I disagree. I don't believe that the board should use an extra approach towards discretion to save money. The rules are the rules, and they should apply to everybody equally. And I think that we shouldn't be encouraging them to balance what is public confidence against the cost of defending their actions.
Well, has the public confidence been impaired by what Kevin Burke said that one day in any measure?
Mr. Warnes, I don't know about that particular case, but I know that the public's confidence is impaired by what is a perceived black hole of complaints At the Judicial Standards Board.
Well, that's a different point. I can't think of a case where, if maybe you can, of a Minnesota judge who's said something public and that's impaired about a case and that's impaired the public confidence.
Well, with all due respect, sir, I'll give you an example because I've been a practicing attorney for many years. There was a judge at a CLE that was videotaped. He made a joke, supposedly, about a bet that he had engaged in with counsel in pending proceedings. It was on videotape. The complaint was filed by a very respectable attorney, and the Judicial Standards Board did nothing. But it certainly impaired the public confidence in the bench. And so those are the kinds of cases, and there are anecdotes all over the state of Minnesota where it seems like there's an extra dose of discretion being used to protect judges or maybe to, you know, avoid costs. It's not really clear. But I do think that your approach is problematic. It's problematic for me. It's probably problematic for a lot of other folks that don't have confidence in the outcome of the Judicial Standards Board.
Senator Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wertz, I just want to kind of follow up on the conversation between you and Senator Ortman and your comment about when you went on the board, you thought that that your reception, I think your words were, might be a little frosty. And
But turned out to be collegial instead.
I understand. Yes. But in reading the Bench and Bar article that you had made reference to, and then I've also read the responses by the Minnesota Board of Judicial Standards to your article, and after reading it, I can understand why you thought, well, maybe things might be a little bit frosty because the Board of Judicial Standards clearly disagreed with you on the various points that you had made. I'm not going to go into what their comments were, but you know, at one point they said that you were simply incorrect. And we all have differences of opinion and different, you know, disagreements and so forth, but it feels to me, Mr. Wertz, like you are very passionate about your belief in protecting the rights of judges. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but that's the feeling that I get. And if that is the case, are you sitting on the Board of Judicial Standards? Is that the right place for you? Or would you be in a better position to protect the administration of justice and judges' rights to simply continue in your role of representing them as an advocate? I mean, how do you make that jump from being a very vigorous advocate on the part of judges to now having to sit in a neutral position and make calls on this very small group of folks that you've been so involved with?
Well, as I said, my involvement on behalf of judges as a percentage of all my time over the years is minuscule. And the only matters that inspired any passion had to do with the First Amendment, about which I confess I believe have strong beliefs about the First Amendment. The other cases had to do with things like, did the judge comply with the 90-day rule? They didn't inspire any passion. I spent 11 years of my career prosecuting complaints at the Lawyers Board, and as I said, I'm very clear that the application of the Code of Judicial Conduct to judges when they violate it is a necessary thing, and I have voted for disciplines and will vote for disciplines. And I think if you were to have asked Terry Sario or to ask any board members, in effect, have I been extremist against judge discipline in my time on the board? No, I haven't been. There have been very few complaints and none that have been really serious in the time I've been on the board. So except as to the First Amendment issues. I don't have any kind of background that I think would justify that comment, you seem to be pro-judge or something like that. And there it's really First Amendment. I represented, I was involved in a chiropractic First Amendment case of all things. When I was at the Lawyers Board, there were First Amendment cases that came, and there were some that I prosecuted, and some I said, we can't do this because of the First Amendment. You're probably not as old as I am, but you're old enough to remember Don Fraser and the Minneapolis City Council and the ordinance on against pornography that was a very hotly debated thing, 20 years ago now, 25 years ago. And Mayor Fraser said at that time he vetoed it because although their hearts were in the right place, the First Amendment is a fundamental freedom of our society, and that ordinance violated it. And I remember being at the Lawyers Board thinking, he's right. And Ed Cleary, who's now just on the Court of Appeals, he made his name defending the RAV flag-burning case. Minnesota Supreme Court unanimously upheld the conviction of the cross-burning case. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. A cross was burned on a minority family's lawn, a horrible, contemptible thing. Ed Cleary defended that case 20 years ago now to the day. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously reversed the Minnesota Supreme Court. And the public might not like that, but the First Amendment is a fundamental freedom of ours, and I have no apologies I'm not a First Amendment extremist, but I am passionate about it, yes.
Any other questions? Sarah Ortman.
Follow up, sir. Did you say that the 90-day requirement doesn't inspire passion? Is that what you just said?
Well, compared to the First Amendment? Warrant. Yes, you can disagree one way or another, but the passion over whether a judge doesn't diary a date right is not on the same plane as the First Amendment.
Well, Senator Ortman.
Sir, I also fundamentally disagree with you on that. No, I think you're misunderstanding how hard it is for somebody to bring a complaint in the Judicial Standards Board, how hard that is. And I'll give you an example. The 90-day rule is very important. I was representing a defendant in a case in Hennepin County, and the spent a lot of money, a lot of hours, a lot of time preparing a summary judgment decision. The judge waited to make the decision, past 90 days to 120 days to 150 days, and the client was fearful that if the client or the lawyer mentioned anything to the court at all, the court would just dismiss the motion for summary judgment, which was, after 180 days, exactly what happened.
Well,
When a resident of the state of Minnesota or a lawyer or a judge is submitting a claim or a complaint to the Judicial Standards Board, it is a very difficult thing to file. And so whether it's First Amendment or a 90-day complaint or the fact that it looks like a judge just doesn't care, they are so important. And I find it shocking that you think that any of these cases don't seem to be, that any one of these cases don't seem to be important and inspire passion, because I'm telling you, the person that filed that complaint is passionate about it.
If I might make just one clarifying point, the majority of the 90-day complaints come to us from a state office that notices on a computer that 92 days, 95, 98 have passed. And the majority of them, the judge got the name wrong or his clerk put it in the diary wrong or something like that. They don't come from individual complainants. I know, I've been a lawyer in private practice, how much individual clients wait for the judge's decision, and especially in matters that, say, have to do with child support or custody or some intimate family matter. Those are very important. I never meant to say they're not very important, but intellectually, you don't get passionate debates and divided courts and going to the U.S. Supreme Court over 90-day violations, and the disciplines are admonitions. So that's the kind of distinction I was trying to make. I didn't mean it at all that it wasn't important to the individual, and I voted for admonitions on 90-day cases just at our April 13 meeting.
Senator McGuire. Senator McGuire, would you turn the microphone to you?
Sorry. I just wanted to be reminded how many people serve on the Board of Judicial Standards. How many people are on the board?
There are 10 members, four lawyers, four judges, or excuse me, four judges, four public members, two lawyers.
Okay, and so you've been saying, Mr. Warrens, that many of the decisions have been pretty unanimous, that there haven't been many where people have.
I think almost every decision has been unanimous after it was talked through, and the ones that weren't had maybe one vote off unanimity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, I just have a question for Senator Ortman. Have you had many cases before the Board of Judicial Standards? Have you tried to present many?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire, I have not brought any complaints in the Judicial Standards Board myself. I've not represented anybody there. I do know of clients and lawyers that have brought them and haven't had any confidence in the result. And so that's of great concern to me. It should be of concern to everybody at this table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree that we should look at the board as a whole and the rules that the board's operating under. And so I was just a little bit concerned by your line of questioning that you were holding one person responsible for the actions of an entire board. And so I was concerned by that because this is a board that acts as a group. And so I was just not understanding how you were, and I was thinking you were concerned about some of the rules that they were operating under. And perhaps as a committee, you know, we could take a look at those rules that they're operating under.
Senator.
Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire, they established their own rules with the Supreme Court. I mean, it's not for the legislature to determine the rules and the process. And so we have a third branch of government, the judiciary branch, that is trying to police its own and discipline its own. And I think the only chance we have to have an impact on that board going forward is through our confirmation of members. And we're trying to send a message. I'm trying to send a very strong message that board has not been accountable to the residents and hasn't seemed to understand its foremost role, which is public confidence in the judiciary. And I think that it's been undermined by the decisions of the board over the last several years, including this last year. And so I'm very concerned about it, and this is my way of saying I disagree with the approach. I think they owe us a whole lot more. Now, there are other ways for us to weigh in if we have judges that aren't acting responsibly, and we can maybe go forward with that on an individualized basis. But for us to weigh in on the approach of the Judicial Standards Board is through this process today.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, first I want to note that Mr. Warrens is a constituent of mine, so I welcome a St. Louis Park resident to be here, and I'm supportive of his proposed
It's nice to meet you, Senator. I'm afraid we haven't had a pleasure.
As you can see, the Judiciary Committee is a committee of strongly held opinions, and we're not afraid to voice them, lawyers and non-lawyers alike. As I anticipate, is from what I can gather, the kind of role that you would play on the boards that you serve on as well. I think it's appropriate to have a diversity of opinions, but I also think it's appropriate to recognize that sometimes an individual's opinion of confidence or lack of confidence in a board is more influenced by whether or not they like the outcome of their complaint than whether or not, more objectively, the complaint is appropriately upheld or dismissed. So it certainly would be a factor. I may be very angry that a judge dismisses a case that I'm a party to, but 10 years later, if I look back on it and try to analyze the law and the facts, I might have a clearer understanding of why that approach was taken, or I might still disagree. But that doesn't necessarily mean that a judge was unfair in the way that they approached a case. I'm not familiar with the particulars of some of the complaints. I'm aware of some of the concerns about extrajudicial comments that have been made about cases, and I think judges are well advised to keep their mouths shut sometimes about certain circumstances. I've seen cases where that's troublesome as well. I think overall, the question is before us today is whether or not Mr. Warrens is an appropriately qualified person to serve on this board, and whether the voice and the perspective that he would bring to this board is one which is worthy and beneficial and would, in fact, inspire confidence of the public, yes, of the bar, of the lawyers that participate in judicial in court all the time, as well as of the judges themselves, who are subject to the discipline of this board. And I haven't heard anything yet that from Mr. Werns that casts doubt on his ability to take that role seriously and appropriately, and to render appropriate judgment and to make important decisions in that regard. In fact, the sense that I get is that he'd perhaps be more outspoken, more willing to challenge the status quo or the orthodoxy of the organization in approaching individual cases. And I think it's healthy to have people on a board that are willing to do that. If in fact there is some conflict between First Amendment rights and particular complaints that are before the board, well, I think, you know, that happens. And, we understand Mr. Werns' touchstone now on those references. And in any other setting, I suspect certain members of this committee would be out there very strongly advocating for the First Amendment freedoms that Mr. Werns is in effect advocating for here today. It happens that in this setting, those First Amendment freedoms and rights may appear to conflict with the rights or the interests of litigants or complainants before the board, and hence we have that age-old conflict as to where do you draw the lines and how do you apply the First Amendment. But in terms of the experience and the willingness to confront these issues forthrightly and to state them, from the background that I've read, from everything I've learned about Mr. Werns, I'm confident that he would be a valuable member of the board. And it's my hope that we will allow him to continue to serve in that capacity. And when the time is appropriate, Mr. Chairman, I'd be willing to make a motion to that effect.
All right. Any further questions? Is there anyone in the audience? Despite my earlier advice or direction to the public, I did not ask this question of Ms. Serio's appointment process. Is there anyone, and I apologize for that, but is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak for or against the appointment of Mr. Werns? Would you please come to the table? And this is specific to the appointment of the candidate before us.
Thank you, Senator Tim Kinley, legislators.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kinley.
I've been involved in a number of organizations, past president of Our Kids in Minnesota, Remember Kids in Divorce Settlements, also part of National Coalition of Free Men, which is goal is to end sexism and violence against men and boys. Our organizations have talked quite a bit about the judicial standards boards. I think we've probably have raised the concerns that are going on there. And so you put me in a somewhat of a tight spot here to where they're for or against, but your whole discussion has been about the judicial standards board. So,
Mr. Kinley, there's specific purpose for this meeting, and it's for the consideration of the candidate before us. Could you speak either for or against the candidate?
I'll speak against the candidate in this aspect, because one of the things that happens on the board in dealing with the black hole situation and not knowing the answers, there's two aspects. When a judge comes down and makes a decision, let's say, for an example, there's ex parte communication that goes on. That's a clear ethics violation. Okay.
Mr. Kinley,
I'm on topic.
What does this have to do with Mr. Werns?
It has to deal with the board, okay,
Mr.
and
Werns.
How the board makes decisions. And part of these decisions for the board members is an ex parte decision, a conversation that takes place. A judge will then go make a decision without the other party being notified. That's an appealable decision. Okay, you can go to the next level. Therefore, a judge what's happening now is a judge can't be disciplined in an ethics violation because it could be appealed. Okay, even though it's a clear violation of the ethics. And if the board is making the decision that even though there's an ethics violation, it's still appealable, therefore we can't do anything, which, and I would say for any member of the board right now, because they're playing that game, I wouldn't approve any of them. So
thank you for
had to get the point. I did.
Hoffman. Mr. Chair, I move that William Wences be moved to the floor without recommendation.
Senator Hoffman has made the motion to move the name of Mr. William Wences to the appointment of the Board on Judicial Standards Boards without recommendation. Is there further discussion? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I actually think that what I heard earlier, both missed about 3-4 minutes, 5 minutes of Mr. Wernz's discussion, but was here for most of it, and Ms. Sario's one. And I actually like the fact that I think these two are challenging the status quo on the board in terms of helping them look at all the procedures they're doing and the way you've communicated with the public. I think that's very valuable, and I think that addresses a lot of the concerns that are being raised here about the way the board functions. This is always difficult in the terms of separation of powers, how we as in our democracy are dealing with this administrative board that is quasi-judicial board, I guess, that's regulating behavior of another branch of government. And I don't see a lot of clear answers to, I don't think there's going to be a perfect process. And as a consequence, I think what we want to do is have very thoughtful people on the board who are using their best integrity, their best judgment in terms of trying to figure out a fair process for how we regulate the judges. And I think Mr. Wernz is a excellent person for doing that, and I don't know if I agree with the way he does it, and as I think we all recognize, we're never going to know exactly how the board functions in all this. I'm not sure how we're going to ever be able to know, and I think their attempts to try and make it more transparent, not the specifics of the personalities and so on and the specific rulings, but how they come to the process and how they inform the public, the person who filed the complaint, how they inform us, I think is very important. And I guess I think I'm very confident of Mr. Wernz's ability to do that. So I would urge opposition to the no recommendation, but I'm not sure if that's the appropriate, that's the higher motion than one to recommend confirmation. So I'm not sure how one responds to that.
Senator McGuire.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have the similar concerns. I'm wanting to support a motion to send Mr. Wernz out with recommendation, but I'd certainly like to see him move, you know, beyond this committee. But I just wanted to echo some of Senator Marty's remarks that this is about a process that we confirm, you know, where a person comes from, what informs their decisions, and not about their decisions. I mean, this is an amazingly qualified person with an extensive background in this area. I mean, I think we're fortunate that we have people of this caliber to come before us willing to serve in this capacity. Both Ms. Sario and Mr. Wernz are amazing individuals with amazing backgrounds. I think we're lucky to have them. And I think if we disagree with decisions that the board makes and we want to send a message to the board, you know, that's appropriate. But sending them out without recommendation is I think, is something that I don't support, because I think we can send messages in other ways, too. You know, we can write a letter. We can do other things. And I need to learn more about the Board of Judicial Standards. But I think there are ways that we can send messages to them, but to not recommend a person who's as qualified as Mr. Wernz, I think, is not the way to do that. So I, I do not support that motion. I would support a motion with recommendation.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to offer a substitute motion that we...
Senator Letts, you could amend the motion.
All right, then I will offer to amend the motion to change the without recommendation to recommendation to confirm.
Senator Letts moves to amend the motion that Mr. Warrants be... that his name be moved to the appointment of the Board on Judicial Standards Boards with recommendation.
If I may add a thought, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman.
Yes, Senator Letts.
There's been a couple of questions here about Mr. Warrens' representation of judges before the board, and it suggests to me that one who actually has some particular experience in this field wrestling with these questions in private practice is somehow less qualified by virtue of that experience to serve on the board. That would be like saying that Sheriff Ingebrigtsen, because he's been a sheriff for so long, is less qualified to judge the appropriateness of public safety legislation that comes before us because he's been a sheriff for so long. In fact, I would suggest that Senator Ingebrigtsen's experience after 30 years or so in law enforcement... is different than Mr. Wernz's experience, which over the course of a lengthy and impressive career has involved 5 cases of representing judges, but 11 years of prosecuting lawyers for ethical violations. So if we're going to balance these out, it seems to me that Mr. Wernz has a much stronger weight of experience enforcing ethical guidelines than defending those accused of ethical violations. And I think that kind of a balanced professional background is exactly the kind of qualifications we'd be looking for with a lawyer representative. If we were to say, let's find a lawyer that has had no experience whatsoever in dealing with ethical issues, we are either going to say, well, I guess it speaks for itself. They'd be completely unqualified, I would submit, to serve on the Board of Judicial Standards. Let's pick a lawyer that's never appeared before a judge in court. They've done entirely a transactional practice. All right, what experience would give them grounds to then later serve on a board that would oversee questions about a judge's conduct? They'd have none because they've never appeared in front of a judge. They have no courtroom experience. It seems to me you're going to, or the alternative is let's find someone with Mr. Wernz's background where they've done prosecution of ethical violations but have never defended against an ethical violation. Well, that would be particularly one-sided. That would make me even more nervous that people who are accused of ethical violations would not, in fact, have someone on the board with a balanced and more objective approach to judging that. We want someone who has seen both sides of issues over the course of a career, because then they've had the level of experience and the diversity of perspective that would enable them in an individual case to approach it appropriately, fairly, both for the complainants and for those who are accused. And both are entitled to an objective analysis of the situation. So, members, I don't think we'll find anyone more qualified than Mr. Wernz to serve as the lawyer member or one of the 2 lawyer members on this board. And for the Judiciary Committee, to say that somehow his qualifications are lacking by making this a no recommendation would call into question our own approach to these kind of confirmations. So I would encourage members to support my amendment to make this a with recommendation to confirm.
The motion is before Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Members, we're not voting simply on this candidate's credentials. We are voting on whether or not, I believe, he has an approach that meets our expectations as the general public for the work that must be done in the Judicial Standards Board. And I don't believe it does, by virtue of his own writings and by virtue of the statements that he's made here today. And, you know, Senator Latz makes an analogy to the former sheriff here. If a sheriff refused during his entire career to charge out a domestic abuse case, would we say, well, that sheriff should be in the state Senate because he will bring an approach that is one side or the other or balanced? No, I think we need to send a message to this Judicial Standards Board that we don't want that kind of leaning towards one side or another in this very important work. And from my point of view, I think we need to have more objectivity in this board. We need to make sure that they inspire confidence. And I don't believe that this candidate's views, not him personally, not his credentials, his views will inspire confidence that that board is acting in the best interest of the residents and taking very seriously the complaints that are being brought before that board. Because, as I said, it is a risk for any individual, any party, any lawyer to bring a complaint before that board. And they have a huge public trust at stake here.
I'm confused.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just confused a bit. I mean, all I've heard Mr. Warren say is that he's passionate about the First Amendment. I hope that we have judges that are passionate about the First Amendment. It's, you know, one of the most important amendments in our Constitution. So I'm curious why you disagree, why you're concerned with his approach. I do disagree, Senator Ortman. I believe he would inspire confidence in this board. The board perhaps has been, you know, more secretive in the past, and we've heard testimony to that extent. And he's been, you know, helping with his term there already in bringing more light to their decisions and to what they're doing. So I think he's already been inspiring more confidence. So I am concerned. I mean, I would be concerned that you're concerned about his approach, which what I've heard from him say is a passion for the First Amendment.
Mr. Chair, very briefly, I know you want to get to the vote here, but his writings, Senator McGuire, were instructive to me about his approach to the work, and also his comments, which were also reflected in his comments, in his writings, that he wants to balance the cost of defending the actions against the public confidence and will use discretion or interpretation in his work. That is a problem for me. There shouldn't be discretion or interpretation for some parties, judges, and not for others, candidates. That is a fundamental problem with the work of the Judicial Standards Board, and he feeds right into what I think is the flawed approach of the entire board. And so that's a problem for me.
Senator Latz's motion is before us. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Senator Hoffman renews her motion to move the name of William Wernz to the appointment of the Board on Judicial Standard Boards without recommendation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. There's no further business before the committee. We stand adjourned.